Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Tonight, we have a great show on relationships, and we're talking about long-term relationships and the ups and downs of how you get through it. And folks, if you're in a short-term relationship, listen in, because this is information that you can use to get through the hills, the peaks, and the valleys, okay? We're going to be speaking with the Blooms, and their latest book is That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. The real question is, are you truly, really ready to? Now, by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choice is the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, visit my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, and again, that's from my website, MoniqueChapman.com. Okay, so my guests this evening, Linda and Charlie Bloom, are both professional psychotherapists, relationship counselors, and seminar leaders. But, you know, it has not insulated them from the same difficulties that their clients go through. And this is their fourth book. It's entitled That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Got Stronger at the Broken Places. It's the story of the Blooms' journey through a series of ordeals and how they managed to reconstruct a relationship out of the ashes of their broken dreams. Now, you can find out more about Linda and Charlie by going to their website, and that's called bloomwork.com. Again, that's bloomwork.com, and we'll be talking about that in detail in a little bit. Welcome back, Linda and Charlie. I love having you guys on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting us. I'm delighted to be with you again.
Oh, absolutely love it. And Charlie, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's great to be here.
Yay. I'm glad to have you guys. Now, you know, this is, you guys do great work in the relationship arena. This is your fourth book. Why this book at this time, Linda?
You know, we wrote this book about 25 years ago, and we put it aside for a while. And I don't feel like I was ready to expose such vulnerable material. I was still pretty tender back in that day. Mm-hmm. Also, we showed it to somebody who we really trusted, and she said, it's so well written, but nobody knows who you are. Who's going to want to read a memoir from you?
Uh-huh.
And you really ought to make your mark first. And so we wrote the other books, which are all self-help. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we wrote in those books, we learned in the trenches during that 5-year difficult period where Charlie was a corporate guy and a flaming workaholic, and I got set in a traditional mom role with 3 little kids, and we fought a lot, and we lived to tell the tale. And so we finally got to the point where we said, it's time to tell this story. It's time to offer our difficulty in the real dark night of the soul that we went through to people, because when we would talk about this time to our students in our classes, they seemed to be inspired that we were in such a dark place and were able to do our own work and come through not only with an intact family, but much higher trust, much higher well-being, and a more creative energy in our relationship than we had ever had before we made that descent. So the ascent was even higher than we had been before the difficult struggle.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the one thing about, you know, the difficulty, as you go through it, you learn a lot if you choose to, and we all have choices. Now, before this show started, you said that you're celebrating soon your 50th wedding anniversary, and you wrote this book 25 years ago. Charlie, did things just change like magically, or was it really hard work? Because as Linda said, you went in corporate America and you actually left the family for a while as far as being away and your commitment to corporate America. How did that break the trust between the two of you?
Wow. Well, it certainly did break the trust, because we both had signed on to and committed to a partnership in our marriage in which we would be equals in terms of responsibility, authority, power, and, you know, we really had in mind, we got married in 1972, mm-hmm. but we've been together since 1968 in a committed partnership. Okay. And from the beginning, we had agreed that we were really going to kind of break the mold of the old idea of what marriage is, with specific roles that are rigidly in place based on gender. And we had done a pretty good job of that for the first few years of our marriage. And then 10 years into it, in 1982, I had an opportunity to accept a position in California. We were living on the East Coast at the time. We're both from the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that we both agreed that we wanted to accept it. And we just had no idea what it was going to require. I was working as a psychotherapist in a mental health clinic, and I had a private practice and part-time teaching job in a local college, and Linda had her own practice as well, and we had three kids, and we're pretty much ensconced in a community of friends and family. So we were really established there in our mm-hmm. early 30s, and really wanted to accept this opportunity, and we both agreed that we would. But it just turned out to be, I was very naive, I think we both were, in terms of underestimating the degree to which the company has expectations of your making your job your primary commitment in front of everything else, including your family, your marriage, you know, everything else is secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So that really turned things upside down. And the book focuses on what we experienced, how things began to break down, and our struggles in trying to reconstruct something when things were spiraling out of control, and how we eventually learned from the errors that we made, and, you know, put some of the corrections in that we needed to, and we pulled ourselves back from the edge of the abyss.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it's really kind of a cautionary tale that can be beneficial for anybody who finds themselves in a similar situation.
Well, I agree, because the information that you share in the book, your story is uniquely yours, of course. However, other people can read the book and see themselves in the same situation. And you really, delve deep. I mean, you share a lot, you expose a lot, and you're brave for doing that. I don't know if I could have been that brave. But Linda, how did you learn to stop blaming Charlie for everything? Put some attention on yourself, give yourself some self-love, some self-attention that you badly needed, and then forgive the whole situation.
Well, it's a great question, and you know, I have a deep debt of gratitude to Stephen Levine and his wife, Andrea, because I read Stephen's books and I went to several of his workshops, and Charlie and I attended a workshop for couples in Brighton Bush, Oregon. We went together when we were at a very low place. I was so furious. I felt so betrayed. I used to call his job the mistress. I said, you love her more than you love me, and you spend more time with her than you love than you do with me, and she's so exciting and new and splendid, and I feel like the old shoe. And I was just so hurt and furious, and we got good help, and I thought I was taking Charlie to the Brighton Bush couples workshop, so because I knew he really respected Stephen and Andrea, and I thought they were going to straighten him out. And I was taking him to get fixed because it was so obvious to me that he was the one that was
he
in
was
wrong. And I was so sure of that. And when they nailed me to the wall, it was a major turning point in my life. And I'm so grateful that they nailed me. And they saw that I had some motivation to do it and that I was desperate. And they said, you know, you have a spiritual practice that you needed to be doing about forgiveness meditation. And for the first year that I did spiritual practice, forgiveness meditation was my main practice. And some days I'd sit down and I would, you know, hold the image of Charlie in my heart, and I'd say, I forgive you for not being here. I forgive you for putting me in the position of being the single parent. No, I don't. I'm really angry with you. And on other days, I could do it. And I could soften my heart and open my heart. So the little bit of time that we would have in between is teaching these five-day courses and flying all over the country in Canada, I was able to feel some tenderness for him and some sweetness in our relationship and really enjoy the little bit of time that we had together. But it was a major piece of work for me because it did feel like a violation of a very sacred vow that we had taken at the beginning of our relationship. And it was a good thing that I didn't know how long we were going to have this irreconcilable difference for, because if I had known that it was going to go on for 5 years, I think I would have been really hopeless and despaired. Sometimes it's better if we don't know. But the good help that I got, and one of the things that we pay forward in our classes to our students, is about getting your attention off of what the other person is doing and saying and not saying, and keep your attention on yourself, because that's where the personal power is, to shift your attitudes, to work with your own belief system about what you think your life has got to look like, which can really trip you up. And that last year that he worked for the company, it was still difficult, and I still was lonely for him, but the arguing did settle down.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a big improvement.
Well, great. You know, Charlie, Linda just referred to as your corporate position being the mistress, but, you know, coming from corporate America, I guess my husband would say he was my boyfriend. It was my boyfriend. But you have to put in X amount of time in order to succeed. So how were you ready and willing at one point to let the mistress go and focus on family?
Well, that was the question that I was struggling with, and we were both struggling with, because I knew two things. I knew, number one, that it was no accident that I was at this job, and it was the right place for me to be, and I was learning an enormous amount about the craft that I was learning, that I could not have learned anywhere else, and I knew that this was going to serve me and the people to whom I was serving in the rest of my life and in my career. And I also knew that at some point I would get to the place where I felt like I had learned what I was there to learn. And I was confident that that would happen. And I was also confident, not sure how. I mean, you mentioned earlier about your being intuitive, and I have some, I think I've always had some trust in my own sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that I would know when I reached that point. And what I kept telling Linda, she never really demanded that I leave. What she did, to her credit, was she told me what things were like for her. She didn't say, you know, you can't continue. You've got to get out of there, even though I knew that she would have been happy if I had.
Mm-hmm.
She made it really clear that, you know, how difficult this was for her, you know, with the three kids and with me gone. I mean, she was basically a single parent most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, and, you know, we devote pretty much a whole chapter to this in the book.
Mm-hmm.
We had an experience together at a retreat for couples that we both attended that really illuminated to me without a doubt that it was time for me to leave.
Okay.
And that's the point at which I made the decision to leave, and I did. The day after we came back from the retreat, I handed in my resignation, and
uh-huh.
and everything changed after that. But there were still significant challenges that uh-huh. we had to confront.
Well, it seems like a lot of wounds had to be healed, and you know,
exactly,
start right. that process.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking to Linda and Charlie Bloom. We're talking about their latest book, That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. Linda, what overall life lessons have you learned by going through this process?
Well, I found strengths that I didn't even know I had uh-huh. in the midst of the ordeal. It was really a big endurance test for me. I considered myself a patient person. I had to develop more patience than I ever thought I would ever have to develop. I considered myself to be a committed wife. I had to draw a whole new scale for commitment. And I found a certain self-reliance and self-trust when I had to make decisions about the kids and my life without even having Charlie to discuss things with on the phone. We had collaborated so much in the years before he had took the corporate job, but when he was on the road, he would have a quick meal break, and he would have the sometimes it really felt like duty calls, and he would call uh-huh. and he would be quick on the phone, and I have to get back in the training room. So I couldn't even, you know, talk about the things that were going on and the decisions that needed to be made. And so it forced me into being more self-referential than it had ever been in my life. And so when we finally got away from the corporation, our life started to heal immediately. And the things that I had been challenged to be, you know, more self-reliant and more self-trusting and to be more forgiving and more patient and more tolerant and more compassionate and allowing a bigger space for our relationship so that it wouldn't be so squeezed. Mm-hmm. All these are what really jettisoned me into a very high level of being, because it was as if during those corporate years, the barren field, you know, it was just dry desert. And as soon as Charlie and I were reunited after he resigned, I feel like everything burst into bloom for me, and those dry, barren, you know, fields got green again.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'm choking on the air. That's really wonderful. But you say you come from a family of black belt grudge holders. So coming from that type of family and being immersed in that type of energy for so long, how did you get to the point of forgiveness and then having the ability to let go?
Well, you know, it was part of my belief system. I love your little BS. It's just a belief system.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't believe at the beginning of the ordeal that it even was possible. I didn't realize that I was making a choice to steam myself up and to keep, you know, feeding this very difficult material about he's not here and he broke the agreement and why did he sire these children and then abandon us and his job's more important. He says the family's so important, but he doesn't act like it. And I was still loyal to my family lineage of, you know, the grudge holders. And I had to be willing to be guilty of the sin of disloyalty, and I had to be willing to be guilty of the sin of outdoing them. And when I found spiritual practice and Jack Kornfield and Stephen Levine and his wife, and they offered me a different belief system, I started to see that I was making a choice to indulge in all that self-righteous thinking about I'm the devoted family member here and he is a jerk. And when I started to catch myself red-handed in the old thinking and the old belief system, and I could make different choices. And when I started to think differently about our relationship, I was able to see his beauty that was always there, that he was a man seriously devoted to service in the world and to making the world a better place. And I could see what attracted me in the beginning that I had lost sight of temporarily, and that he did have sweetness and a tender heart, and that he was really just lost for a while attempting to live up to the specifications that the corporate world laid on him. And when I could see from a more expansive view, I call that the eagle vision instead of mouse vision, I was able to see that he still had those gorgeous qualities that I so admired in him. And I let those be in the forefront of my mind rather than my dissatisfaction. And it was a piece of work to discipline my mind to see the beauty rather than the lack.
Well, you guys, you know, you worked through it. Charlie came back. Linda, were you working outside the home at the time?
Yes, but I left the career as a counselor for a few years. I really just didn't feel like my life worked, so I didn't feel that I belonged counseling anybody to have their lives work better. So I went back to school, and I became a body worker, and I worked in a fancy spa as a body worker, so I was still in service, but I didn't talk to people. And then when we started to, you know, get back on a road of integrity with our relationship, then I went back into the field of counseling. And as soon as he resigned, we started our own business and started offering our own workshops.
And that is part of what saved you. Now, Charlie, you know, people often think when a relationship is going through a struggle that, you know, it can be either money, you know, or the job, or even the lack of sex. How did you guys get past not being together and the sexual feelings of maybe jealousy or infidelity?
It was a process. It wasn't, you know, like a an overnight turnaround, because as things deteriorated, the stressors of the that were present as a result of the absence of what we had come to depend upon in terms of recharging our relationship just got amplified. And so it really, first of all, the first thing was we had to tell the truth about what we were experiencing and what we were missing. And I was so caught up in wanting to make the grade on the job the first year that I was there that I was not even particularly aware of how much the relationship was suffering. And Linda brought that to my attention in various ways. And in my various ways, I tried to deflect her feedback because I didn't want to hear anything that was going to spoil or upset the apple cart. I was really on a roll in terms of I've got to master this challenge in front of me. And it's like we had burned our bridges as far as moving to California. And I really did feel like there wasn't any other option, even though I didn't want another one. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't any option other than we've got to make this work. I've got to make this job work. And Linda was focused on, we've got to make this marriage work, because whether the job works or not, if we don't have a marriage, our whole family is going to be fragmented. Mm-hmm. And so she was mindful of that. And I was mindful of, you know, the career side of it. And, of course, you know, there were real difficulties in terms of not having the time that we needed to devote to the relationship. And what we learned to do is we learned to really identify the few windows of opportunity for connection that we had when I was home, and to really exploit them, to really take advantage of those times. And sometimes it would be nothing more than a few hours. Sometimes it would be a day or two. Less often it would be several days, but usually, I mean, I was gone for an average of pretty close to 3 weeks a month. So we just learned to use the time that I was around very consciously, very intentionally, very deliberately to restore some degree of trust and connection in our relationship. And I have to say that, again, it was Linda who was much more mindful of the need to do that. She took the initiative to do it. Mm-hmm. She did it for the most part, not always, but in a way that was respectful and didn't feel shameful to me. We had a lot of moments where it broke down because we were both operating pretty close to the edge most of the time.
Okay. Linda, did you consider divorce during that time?
I absolutely had that on my mind with great frequency. Uh-huh. And we went right up to the edge because it was all but call the divorce lawyer. That's how close we stayed near the edge for an extended period of time. And, you know, everybody's heard every long-term relationship that has any meaning is going to have some difficult periods. So my concept about that is maybe there's going to be some difficult weeks or months. I had no concept that it could be difficult years. And it's very interesting to me to get feedback from some of the people who read the book. Some people are very identified with Charlie's position, and they see me as somewhat of a bad guy and a nag, and what is she giving him so much trouble for? The guy's just trying to make a good living for his family and better his career. And some people are, you know, are very identified with me. She's a stand for the family and for connection. And what kind of a jerk is he that he's, you know, flying all over the place and leaving his family? And we have come to see over our many years of doing counseling and teaching workshops that often the opposites attract. And the freedom fighter, who's a more self-contained system and, you know, independence and freedom is their high value, gets together with a person who really is a stand for the togetherness, the family togetherness, the couple togetherness, the emotional, you know, rapport. And one of the things that allowed us to get through that difficult time, and I will always be grateful to Charlie for taking influence on this point, is that when we would have one day that we could be together, that we would put aside all of the stress and all the demands of our life from family and career and just be with each other and make that time count. So the emotional intimacy and the sexual intimacy was restorative and would put enough in my empty tank so I could get through one more week and not call the divorce lawyer.
Uh-huh, but did you have resentment at that time? Because I know sometimes I get mad at my husband of 43 years, and I am, like, resentful for a bit, and then I get past it, but it's like there's this big, you know, block of resentment in front of me.
And I had to clear that. Okay. And I would say to Charlie, I just want to be regular people. And what that would mean was, I'm going to give you a limited amount of time for you to talk obsessively about your job, and then we're going to cut that off and have a boundary about it. And I'm going to be a regular person, and I'm going to put a boundary around my resentment and put that on the shelf. I've come to call that healthy denial. And I put that on the shelf, and I leave it there, and I don't let it contaminate our precious time together, that is declared sacred time.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, Charlie, how did it work with the children during that time frame? I mean, you're working, you're not spending as much time with them. Linda's basically has them 24/7. How did the relationship with the kids, both yours and Linda, impact your lives? Because it seems like you might have been a little bit absent.
Oh, that's a bit of an understatement. I was more than a little bit absent. I just felt like when I was home, I really wanted to get caught up. And I wanted to get caught up with Linda. I wanted to get caught up with the kids. I was acutely aware of how much I was not with the kids, because I had been a very involved parent before we moved to the West Coast. And so I had that agenda of, you know, I want to get caught up with Linda, I want to get caught up with the kids. And then I had this other part that I wanted to get caught up with me. I wanted to get some time to myself, because when I was gone, I was pretty much immersed in working with people very, very long hours.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very intense environment. And I'm more introverted than I am extroverted. And I recharge by getting some downtime, some solitude. And I wasn't getting it. So when I would come home, I had all these agendas.
Uh-huh.
And I felt, for the most part, the whole time I was working at the company, which was almost 6 years, I felt like I was never really fully complete with any one of those domains.
Uh-huh.
I felt like there was always more that was needed from me,
uh-huh,
to me, to the kids, to Linda, to the job. And it just was kind of an ongoing feeling.
Did the kids ever come out and say, well, Daddy, I want you to stay home, I don't want you to go? You know, they put the work guilt on you, if you will.
They had ways of letting me know. Two of them were very small. They were 1 and 3 when we first moved out. Our oldest was 7. But yeah, they had ways of letting me know, and I would feel terrible. There's just so many times and so many different ways that you can say, I'm sorry, but that you need to do this, and I'll make it up to you. And after a while, it just sounds hollow to them.
Yeah.
It was a source of stress for me, because he would feel guilty about being missing in action from the children's lives. And so when he was home, he would just play with them.
Mm.
And he be in the role of disciplinarian, which put me in the position of being the monitor and the cop and, you know, the...
You're the bad guy.
Yes. And I didn't like being in that position.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't blame...
put over the kids a lot about disciplining them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I would say these kids need more form and structure. They need limits and consequences. They're too wild and out of control, Charlie. The world will give them consequences, and we will be off fighting about that too.
Oh my goodness! So, looking back on it, and from your kids' perspective, did they feel that they were scarred in any way by growing up in the household the way it was structured at the time?
You know, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as difficult on them as it was on me. And I think that they didn't have any basis to compare it to. And They just really enjoyed Charlie when he was around and thought that he was really wonderful dad. And Charlie had a harder time with it when he finally left and saw the things that he hadn't seen during the time he was so caught up in all the work. But the kids seem to have come through it pretty well. They don't express resentment about that time.
Great. I am so happy because sometimes in families, you know, that truly does happen. Now, with both of you being psychotherapists and working with relationships, I want to bring up a relationship that's very much in the news, and I just want your thoughts about it, not, you know, a political thing. And yes, we're going to talk about the man who's in the White House. Now, his wife, who's been, you know, kind of quiet, she just went through some medical process, and you know, she's got all of this energy out there about this person, that person, the other person. If you were working with her, if she called you or any other woman in this position called you to figure out what the next step is, how would you counsel her? And I'd like to hear from each of you.
Oh boy. I've thought about that. I've thought about what it would be like to be living with the president, and that to me would be quite a challenging ordeal for most people, because his needs are so excessive, his personal emotional needs, I guess what I would want to do before I'd give her any advice at all is I'd want to ask her a lot of questions about what is it like for her, how is she doing. What does she experience in terms of her needs? Are they getting met? If they are not, are there ways that they can be met through this relationship? And if not, can they be met through other relationships without jeopardizing this one? Because it's clear that she is committed to being in this marriage. I don't think that she wants to leave it. I don't think that this is necessarily her ideal picture of the way she'd like it to be, but I would really ask her these questions not only for my own understanding of her situation more, but to really support her to become self-reflective about what her experience is, because that's where I think she can find some of the tools and resources that she needs to be able to adequately come to terms with her situation.
Okay. Linda?
Yes, I have had over many years women in my caseload. Sometimes the husbands won't come in for couples counseling, and so I'll only have access to the woman, and that she's with a difficult man because he's angry or he's arrogant or he's rude or he's absent with his work or he might be absent with his hobbies or his spiritual practice. And I really offer the women who are in that position with difficult and demanding partners the same thing, and I always talk to them about compassionate self-care and responsible self-care, and what does that look like for them. And I learned this in the trenches myself, that I needed a much higher level of support when Charlie was absent. I didn't fill in the gaping hole that was left by him with hiring a nanny. It would have been so much easier for me to just get through that ordeal of a time if I had just had more physical help, you know, a couple of extra hands, getting the kids lunches and doing laundry and things like that. But if I was in a woman's group during that time, that were the women were really showing up and being authentic and real and supportive and loving each other, it would have helped me during that time. So I learned the hard way what made my life more difficult in the demanding circumstances, and that reaching out for a very high level of support from family and friends, and if you don't have them in your family, you've got to go collect your family of choice and do the soul nourishing things, whatever they are. Do you know, for some people that's going to the hot tubs, and for some time people that's going to the ashram with a spiritual teacher, and everybody has the way that they fill up their own soul tank. But if you're partnered with somebody who is difficult in any way, mm-hmm. for you to take responsibility for creating the best life that you can apart from them, so that you're not so dependent on them.
Do you guys feel, and either of you can or both can answer this, do you guys feel that at any time sometimes people should just let go, get a divorce, and move on? Or should one stay in the relationship and work through it?
I don't believe that there's a generic answer to that question. It varies. I certainly don't believe that every marriage deserves to be saved or should be saved. I would hesitate to describe a condition that is a deal breaker, because it varies from person to person, time to time, couple to couple, what a true deal breaker is. And you know, by that I mean a condition or a circumstance that is intolerable to one or both of the partners. There are some bona fide mismatches that people have. What we have found is that two of the mistakes that couples can make, number one is they leave a potentially repairable marriage before they have really given it their very best shot. A lot of couples, one of them will decide, I'm done, this isn't working, I'm out of here. And they come to that conclusion and act on that conclusion before they've really done all they can do. The other mistake that couples can make is that one of them can stay in a relationship too long. Uh-huh. And the danger in that is that if it becomes evident that this is not working, this person that you're with is not committed to the same thing you are, they're not willing to do their share, they're not willing to stop making you the problem no matter what you do, and you continue to tolerate that when it eventually does end, and it will at some point, not necessarily in divorce, by the way. I mean, they might stay together, but the marriage itself will die.
Right.
At that point, then the person who has been tolerating the intolerable has a lot of repair work to do on their own soul, and they've lost trust in themselves. I don't believe that it's possible or even necessarily desirable for every couple to make a marriage work.
Okay, Linda, anything you want to add?
Yes, there's some research about the couples who divorce and what percentage of them have gone for at least one marriage counseling session before the divorce. Mm-hmm. And the majority of people who divorce have not even had even one marriage counseling session. Mm-hmm. I find that really depressing and heartbreaking, because I know that there are some good marriage counselors out there. Mm-hmm. I know for sure that there's some wonderful workshops for couples to handle differences and to find love when it's, you know, seems like it's gone away. There may be an ember under the ash that can be flamed back, you know, and it's so sad to me that couples are embarrassed to reach out for help. The average couple, when they do reach out for help, have been struggling for an average of 6 years before they do that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a shame. So if people would get the right help and get their attention on themselves, they may have a chance for the breakdown to become a breakthrough rather than a breakup. But I agree with Charlie. There really are some mismatches, and those people are doing the best thing if they can let go with some loving kindness, not taking parting shots as they leave, not making themselves or the other person bad and wrong. That if they can let go, their chances that they could find a good, healthy, wholesome relationship with somebody else is so increased, because the second marriages have a more dismal, you know, breakup rate mm-hmm. than the first ones. The first yeah. marriages are 50%, but the second marriages are breaking up at 60% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't do the work, you don't get any place. Now, you folks have a wonderful website, bloomwork.com. When one goes there, tell us what we're going to find.
Well, you see our shining faces, and you see the covers of all the four books that we have written. We blog on several blog sites, and there are links to all the blog sites. Mm-hmm. And there's a link to, we do Facebook Live at 12:30 every Thursday, and mm-hmm. if people can't show up to see the half an hour piece that we do on relationship, on the live one, they're all archived, so there's a link to that. And our schedule for where we teach at the brand new Personal Growth Center, Multiversity, which is very near us, and we also teach at Esalen in Kripalu and Northern California Mindfulness Institute in Berkeley. So mm-hmm. they would see what our schedule would be, and they can sign up for our mailing list, and when you get on our email list, we send a booster shot of inspiration out once a month.
Okay. Charlie, anything you want to add to that?
I think she covered it. We have a bunch of video clips, too, that are mm-hmm. Kind of fun to watch, and they cover a lot of different aspects of relationship. So there's a lot of resources on the website.
Okay. Well, we're coming near the end of our time together, but I'd like for each of you to share some words of wisdom regarding relationships with the audience, and you guys can pick who goes first.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I would offer to your listening audience to really take a look at seeing their relationship as a catalyst for their own personal growth. And I think that not enough people yet are holding their relationship as the exquisite teacher that it can be about places that they need to grow, places they need to learn, qualities that they may need to develop in themselves, like patience or commitment or courage or forgiveness, and to really see that you have an exquisite teacher right under your same roof, if you can open to the teachings that are available there, rather than when it gets difficult, you feel like you want to kill the messenger rather than open to the message. Okay. So I would say that's a good rule of thumb. If you can hold that lofty vision that we invited this person into our life to be a teacher of some of our deepest life lessons.
Okay. And Charlie?
I guess the abbreviated version for me would be, yes, relationships can at times require a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And as you do the work, it gets easier, and at some point it no longer feels like work. It feels like an opportunity and a gift. And the last thing is that it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. I love that it's worth it. Well, you know, listening to you guys and having known you for a few years, as you've been on the show, I know that you're very good friends at the base of everything. And for me, that is the crux of it. If you can be your best friends mm-hmm. when you go through the rough times, it's easier. A little bit easier to get through it, because you have that common denominator of being best friends underneath.
That's
absolutely.
That's huge. That's a very important factor.
Yeah. So, and I want to thank you guys for writing this wonderful book. And guys, check out their website. The book is available everywhere. It's That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. And don't, it's a memoir of their life, yes, but it also will, you'll see parts of your life in it. You'll see parts of your friend's life in it. And you get very good concrete information and energy so that you can move past whatever has gotten you stuck. And whatever has gotten you stuck is part belief system and part bullshit. So let go of the bullshit, adjust your belief system, and go out there and get this book, because it's truly a book that's going to help. We need it today in many walks of life. We truly need this book. So I want to thank the audience and Charlie and Linda for being with me tonight as we collectively get over it and fix our broken relationships. It's an honor to have everybody with me. When you're ready to live a more balanced life, give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call. 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of healing your relationships. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.